So how do you feel about when you go on a journey? Do you ever say, are we there yet? Or probably your children have said, are we there yet? And what about when you get halfway along on your journey? Is there a lightness, a happiness, a joy that you are nearer the end than the start? Well, today we're halfway through our journey through Advent. You can see we've lit our third candle. We've got two more candles to go. So we're halfway through. We've got, and in this year there are four whole weeks, so we're on the midpoint of our journey. Though those of you who have been eating your chocolate, you'll find you're not quite halfway there, because it's the 11th today and there are 13 more pieces of chocolate to come. But that's a reminder that Advent and December are not the same things. On the basis that we become more joyful when one gets halfway through the journey, so this Sunday is often called Joy Sunday. Joy at the anticipation of the coming of Christ as we recall the events of Advent, both his first coming but also his second coming. And so far in Advent, in our journey, we've thought about hope, watching and waiting. We've also thought about preparation, taking time to prepare for Christ's return. And last week we thought about the grand work that God had done in bringing John the Baptist, preparing the way for Jesus. And as we've said, the traditional theme for this third Sunday is joy, anticipating the coming of the Lord in his incarnation, God becoming man as a baby, and in the stable, which we've got out this week, and in his return to put all things right at the end of time. And today we come to our passage in Isaiah 35, and it's all about hope and redemption. It's a wonderful poem where the prophet Isaiah speaks to us. It's about the hope of the desert being turned into a garden, where fertility and the beauty of Lebanon and Carmel and Sharon are there. Those are places of abundance and beauty to the people of Isaiah's day. And then in the poem, there is a longing, a waiting for God to come. And as we journey through Advent, we are waiting for our God to come. Yet, what happens when he comes? He will bring change. Change in society and in health and in inclusion. The eyes of the blind are opened. The deaf hear. The lame leap. The mute shout for joy. There's also water gushing forth in the desert and wastelands turning into pleasant places. And then in our poem, we see there's a highway. A place where the holy will walk, a way that is safe, and it will come to Zion, the city of God. And then throughout the poem, there is rejoicing. The desert will bloom, it will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. Those who are mute will shout for joy, though the holy will enter Zion singing. So whether there's shouting or there's singing, the creation, the mute, the travellers all have joy. Joy at the coming of God. The presence of God in the middle of his people should bring us joy. That is what we do in Advent. We wait with joy for the coming of God, knowing that he brings joy to the world. Joy to the world. The Lord is come. Let the earth receive her King. That's the Isaac Watts hymn. It was the first window in the St. Mark's Advent calendar, I think. But what is this wonderful poem in Isaiah 35 celebrating or looking to, and how does it fit into the story of scriptures? It's part of that story of God working out his purposes in scriptures. Isaiah in itself is a long book, and it speaks of a whole range of situations. And yet at the heart of this book are the chapters 34 and 35. They go together as a pair at the turning point in the book of Isaiah. Chapter 34 is all about judgment. Judgment against the nation symbolized by Edom, where the picture is the productive land is turned into a desert because of the judgment of God on the nations. And then in contrast, in chapter 35, we see the desert turning into a garden. These two chapters sum up the first part of Isaiah, where Isaiah was teaching about the nations. He's saying that there's judgment and there is hope for the nations, including Israel. And yet God always demonstrates himself as sovereign over all the nations. There is either judgment on the nations, or there is redemption and hope. In Isaiah 34, the streams are turned into pitch in judgment. And Isaiah 35, the wilderness will blossom and bloom. The sand, the burning sand, will become pools of water. There is judgment or there is redemption. That is the story of Isaiah. And that's what we see in our passage. And yet at the same time, our passage is looking forward to the later part of Isaiah, where hope and comfort is the key themes, where there's redemption and salvation, and there is an expectation of a servant, or the servant even, who will redeem the people and bring them back from exile and bring hope, the hope of a new heavens and a new earth, where justice and righteousness will reign forever. So we see our chapters, our chapter is at the fulcrum, at the very turning point of the book of Isaiah, making that contrast clear between what we have as a nightmare of judgment in chapter 34 and a dream of salvation in chapter 35. And all through Isaiah, these are the alternatives: judgment or redemption. And when will this happen? What is the poem looking to? It is a dream of God's intervention and renewal. But when is it happening? There are partial fulfillments at the time of Isaiah with the turning back of the Assyrian invaders. And then there's also fulfillment at the return of exile 150 years later. But we also see this being fulfilled in the coming of Christ, as he will save his people from their sins. But even then, even when we look at the first coming, we see there's something more. There's an expectation of something more than what we've seen already. So it looks forward to the second coming, to the return of Christ at the end of time and the city of God. Within this poem, I want to highlight three themes. Not normally preach three-point sermons, but we are today. Firstly, we look at creation transformed. And then secondly, the coming of God to right injustice and the highway for the redeemed. So let's look at that in more detail. So firstly, we see creation transformed. It's a vision of this transformation. And with it, there's singing and there's rejoicing. The desert will be glad. The wilderness rejoices. Waters gush out and streams in the deserts. But behind all this is not man, but it is God at work. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God in this transformation. It is God who works. It's a vision of God restoring his creation, in contrast to that judgment that God brings on his creation in 34. Paul reminds us in Romans 8 about the creation groaning at the pains of childbirth, waiting for its restoration. And so here we have the prophet seeing the work of God restoring his creation. In Romans 8 we see rejoicing and liberation as the creation is transformed, and here the creation shouts for joy. This picture is probably both a literal picture, but also a pictorial picture, a metaphor. The desert is physically restored, and the crocus does grow. It's something that happens when the rains come on the wilderness. The desert breaks into bloom, and that picture there, it's a picture from the Atacama Desert in 2015, where there was the first time there had been rain in the desert. You know, Atacama Desert in Chile is the driest place in the world. It had been first rain in it for 15 years. And then the flowers break out into bloom. That's what happens when rain comes. So it's a literal picture of what happens when God sends his rain on the desert. But it's also pictorial. We have a metaphor here in that through the Bible, the desert is a place of separation from God. There's a sense in the scriptures that we start with a garden. The scriptures start with a garden, the Garden of Eden. And humanity is excluded from that garden because of the fall. They have sinned and they are exiled into wilderness, into the desert. And the story of that restoration, of God's wanting to restore his people, the humanity back to him, that story is told through the whole of scriptures, culminating in a new heavens and a new earth where Jesus returns in his second advent and is no longer wilderness, but we are in the city of God where there's water and there's trees and there's blossoming and blooming and fruit. So this dream in Isaiah sees its final fulfillment in the return of Christ and the city of God, pictured in the vision of Revelation 21, the city of God coming down out of heaven. It shone with the glory of God and the water of life and the tree of life bearing fruit. The desert is turned into a garden. Creation is transformed and it is full of joy. And then secondly, in our poem, we see the coming of God. The picture is of the people probably on a pilgrims going up to Jerusalem. They're waiting, they're weary, they're in need of encouragement as they head towards Jerusalem. There is excitement, yet there's excitement in that weariness. And they're seeking encouragement as they wait and anticipate the coming of God. Be strong, the passage says. Do not fear, your God will come. At Advent, we wait in expectation for the coming of God into the world. Christ coming as a baby at Christmas, but also his return as King when he will renew the heavens and the earth, where he will transform creation as we've just seen. Isaiah's vision has the people waiting with fearful hearts. Your God will come, we're told. Do we wait with fearful and expectant hearts for Christmas? But not just for Christmas, for the return of Christ. How will he come? We're told in our passage he will come in two ways. He will come with vengeance and with vengeance and divine retribution, and he will come to save us. God will put everything right. Maybe we don't particularly like the idea of vengeance, but surely if things are not put right, there cannot be peace in the world. In terms of justice, people often talk about victims, victims' support and victims having their say on the impact of a crime on them. Many people feel that the impact on victims, if it's not considered properly, justice is not being done. And so here we have God coming with vengeance for wrong suffered. He does not ignore wrongdoings. He rights the wrongs in the world for those who have suffered. Justice is done when God comes. God will come to save his people, to save victims of injustice, and he brings healing, and he brings hope to all people. The eyes of the blind are opened, the lame leap like deer, the mouths of the mute shout for joy, we're told. God comes to save, righting injustice, healing, and opening the eyes of the blind. That is the vision that we have in Isaiah 35. Who does that remind you of? Let's look at our gospel reading, our second reading. We had there John the Baptist. He's in prison. He's losing hope. He's not certain of what's happening in his life. Earlier, he had been sure that Jesus was the one sent. But things have not developed as he had anticipated. So in the midst of his uncertainty and his depression, he sends his disciples to Jesus and says, "Are you the one who is to come? Or should we look for another one?" How does Jesus reply? He doesn't give a straight answer. Does Jesus ever give straight answers? But he says, look around. Report what you see. Go back. Report what you see, he says. The blind receive sight. The lame walk. The deaf hear. He is making explicit reference to this passage in Isaiah. Jesus is identifying himself with the fulfillment of Isaiah 35, these verses 4 to 6. We see in those verses, say to those who are fearful, as John's heart was fearful, be strong, do not fear. John needed encouragement while he was in prison. Your God will come. Is that who Jesus is identifying with? Yes, he's saying, look at what is happening. These things that are happening around us, these are what would happen when Isaiah says, your God will come. So who is Jesus? Jesus brings freedom and he brings release. He comes to heal, to save. And with that, there's joy and there's rejoicing. Just as the wilderness rejoices when it is transformed, so God's people rejoice as they are transformed and saved. God gives abundant life. Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. The lame leap like the deer, the mute sing and shout for joy. Maybe we should be shouting for joy, singing. We're a bit cold in here. Perhaps we should be jumping up and shouting for joy to warm ourselves up. I'm not quite that sort of to get you to do that, but we need to shout for joy because it is the Lord, God is coming. So we've seen creation transformed, and that the creation shouts for joy. God is coming to right injustice, and we shout for joy. And next we see a highway that is running through the restored landscape. We're not told yet where it goes, but we are told who may walk on the highway. It is a highway of holiness, the way of holiness. The redeemed will walk on the highway. It will be a safe highway, we're told. There aren't going to be wild animals and lions and ravenous beasts, but only the redeemed will walk on this highway. We're also told that the unclean and fools are excluded from this highway. Who are the unclean and who are fools? The psalmist tells us that the fool says in his heart that there is no God. So those who reject God do not walk on the highway. If you are foolish, we're being told, and say that there is no God, you will not walk on God's highway. And who are the unclean? In the Old Testament, uncleanness was not about how much you washed with sunlight soap. It was a ceremonial state before God of being unclean. There were various regulations about what made one clean and what made one unclean, and ways to respond to uncleanness. It was through sacrifice and offerings at the tabernacle. But underpinning all of these regulations was God's graciousness. God was prepared to respond in cleansing his people and accepting their offerings. He responds to their faithfulness by being faithful to them. So we're being told here that those who reject God's regulations and reject the means that he has provided to come to them through offerings and sacrifice in the Old Testament, is they are not journeying on the highway. So we have two people, those who deny God's existence and those who ignore God's grace. They're not on the highway. But then who is on the highway? It is the redeemed. But what is redemption and who are the redeemed? The word means it's brought back. God buys us back. He purchases us. The redeemed are those brought back by God. And if we think about Isaiah's experience, what has he encountered with God? He's aware of God because he's had a vision of God. He's encountered God in a vision in the temple. That vision made him aware of who he was, his uncleanness before God. And it wasn't just the ceremonial uncleanness, it was a deep-hearted uncleanness. If we look at Isaiah chapter 6, we see he says, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple." And how did he respond to this vision of the Lord? He said, Woe to me, I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." He had a vision of the Lord in his temple, and he became aware of his uncleanness, his sinfulness before a holy God. So what did he do about that? Did he vow to be better and to seek to be free, to see himself, free himself and to live a better life? No, that wouldn't have worked. What the Lord did, he cleansed him. He made him holy and he commissioned him for service. Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. And with it, he touched my lips and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Isaiah, his uncleanness was atoned for, taken away. He has this vision of the Lord. He recognizes his sinfulness. He recognizes his uncleanness, and God deals with it. God takes away his sin. So that is Isaiah's experience. The way of holiness comes about by recognizing one's uncleanness and trusting God to cleanse us. It is not about being holy in our own strength or in our own will. It is about a holiness that comes to us, imparted to us, as we turn to God and are forgiven. A holiness that is from God's initiative. That was the experience of Isaiah, and through Jesus, we can have that same encounter with God. As we encounter God, As we encounter Jesus, we see ourselves as unclean. That is why we come in confession. We see unclean and sinful, just as Isaiah saw himself before God as unclean and sinful. And we find that Jesus can cleanse us and does cleanse us, and he brings us forgiveness. That is what redemption means. That is the idea of redemption. Those who are delivered by God, they are brought back into his presence. Our God comes. So this highway is the way of Jesus. He is the Redeemer. Paul reminds us, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us. And also he says, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify us for himself. It is those people, it is these people, us, who walk this highway, this way of holiness, if we have been rescued by the Lord. So what do we do about it? Are we on this highway? This Advent, that is a key question for us. Only the redeemed will walk this safe highway, those rescued by the Lord. The highway leads to Zion, to the holy city. And everlasting joy is there, with sorrow and sighing fleeing away. Is that not a highway we want to be on? It is the way to the Lord. Isaiah says, your God will come. He will come to save you. Jesus came to us at Christmas to save us. Remember what the angel said to Joseph. You will call his name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. And Jesus will return to right all injustice, and to bring his redeemed to the holy city with everlasting joy. So where does this highway go? It goes to the city, to Zion, the city of God. The holy city is the place where God will dwell with his people. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or sorrow or pain or crying, for the old order of things has passed away. He will make everything new. That is what we're told in Revelation 21. This is the message of Advent. This is the message of this poem in Isaiah 35. He will make everything new. We have the creation transformed. Your God comes to save us. And there is a highway for the redeemed, a way to God in his presence. So for us, we need to decide how we respond at Advent. And our journey to Christmas. Are we there yet? Thinking only of Christmas? Is it all about presents and parties and families? All of which are good in themselves. Or do we really long for the coming of Christ? The coming of God into our hearts, into our world, into our lives. Do we trust in Him for life and death, his life and his death, his resurrection, to bring us back to God, to redeem us, to buy us back? Do we long for his return, when he will make all things new, righting injustice and bringing peace in the world? We need to be on this highway, the highway for the redeemed. Are you on this highway? You can be when you turn to Jesus. When you trust him in confession and repentance, recognizing your sin and turning to him for forgiveness. He is the Redeemer. Amen.